Succession number 27083, Reel 24.
That was my view, yes. And so I reckon that if I was going to do this thing, and unlike the army, and to a lesser extent the Air Force, the army it was virtually obligatory. If you were going to get anywhere, you had to do the staff course.
This was my next question.
The Air Force, it was nearer to that than to the naval approach. And the naval approach was, we've got to have a drafting margin somewhere, so you might as well go into a staff course. We always sent two to the Army staff course. We sent two to the RAF staff course at Bracknell, and vice versa, and so forth. But it was not, it frankly wasn't taken too seriously by the Navy. I thought it was a good thing to do, provided you did it early, young. And so I asked to do the staff course. They were very good to me. I got it. And I went there from Whaley in 1952. It was then running at over a period of 6 months. And when I joined, in fact, when the list came out in an Admiralty Fleet order as to who was going to do it, I was still a lieutenant. And I got my half stripe shortly afterwards. So I'm talking now of, I suppose, the middle of 52. I really have nothing to say about the staff course. It was an excellent thing. It, in my judgment, it totally vindicated my view that you should do it young or it was a waste of time. And it wasn't a waste of time by any means. A very good team on it, and a very happy bunch, really. And at the end of it, I was appointed to a daring class destroyer, the Delight, building at Fairfields. In fact, I had been up and I called on a man calling himself a Commodore Superintendent Contract Built Ships, who had an office in Newcastle, and as the name implies, he was in a general supervisory charge of ships under construction. And I called on him on the way up to visit this ship, even though I had not yet been, I had not yet assumed command. I'd been appointed to a date, but that date was considerably later. And he was a retired officer, as was customary, and quite a nice old buzzard, and he took me out to lunch, and he revealed that he had a problem with the ship, because he got the impression that the ship wasn't really running quite the program, and he couldn't quite understand why not. Well, I went up, and he was dead right, and the ship was enormously delayed. And I came back and I reported this. And then it came out officially the ship had been delayed. It seemed to be my fate. I'll come repeat almost word for word that later on. And I went back to Whaley, and the line they took was, there's plenty of things for you to do here. There is just one thing. The Admiralty wants someone to go and take charge of all the preparations for the Navy's participation in London for the coronation the following year. And what we don't yet know, said Whaley, is whether they want an old and bold or a young and enthusiastic. Well, it turned out that they wanted the latter, and so I got the job. And I was appointed to the Gunnery Division in the Admiralty for the planning of the coronation. which was to take place, of course, in 52. And I'm talking now of the late summer of 53. I'm talking now of the late summer of 52.
Can I ask a question that's wholly tangential to all of this?
Yes, absolutely.
You've now been back in the country for, since Malta, for 2 years. Then.
Yes.
May I ask what has happened to your love life? This girl in Malta?
You may, but I'm not going to answer it yet, because I am going to come on to that, but it won't be for...
I'm just trying to keep tabs on...
I have not forgotten, and I promise you I won't let you down, but it was not to be reactivated seriously for several years yet,
right,
due to circumstances at the moment. We kept in touch a bit. I well recall meeting my loved one's parents, and he was then, the Admiral was commanding the reserve fleet, Jock McCall.
So they had come back to the UK?
They'd come back to the UK, yes.
Bringing their daughter with them?
Yes. And I was going to, join them for a picnic supper. At some midpoint. They had a house in Liphook at the time, and Jock McCall was going to take the salute at, and I think it was in Earl's Court by then, at the Royal Tournament. It was his night. And when it came to going on after the supper, and he had to be there at the time, because I was just going as a spectator, tagging along with my beloved, as it were. And I was going to drive her up in my Allard, which I hoped would impress. And she, of course, was 2 years older than I. Though I hadn't planned to pop the question that night or anything. And when it came to moving off after supper, my car wouldn't start, which was maddening. And so I and my beloved were left behind. Well, eventually a passing AA man was accosted and he got it going. And we went up and arrived rather late. That, again, did not impress my my beloved's parents and Julie, but so. I haven't forgotten, so you needn't worry. Had you another one?
No, it's the only question. I just wanted to keep
This is obviously burning you. Can we stop a minute? So here I am, back in the Admiralty, appointed to the Gunnery Division in order to do the planning and organizing of the Navy's participation at the coronation of the Queen the following year in London. The director of the Gunnery Division was a charming man who I mentioned previously when he was the gunnery officer of the Anson, Captain J.Y. Thompson. And the Gunnery Division was housed in what was known as the bank block of the Admiralty, overlooking Whitehall. It was a curious arrangement, it was a curious appointment, really, in that for long months it was a one-man band, me. I had no staff, and all sorts of basic stuff that might have been provided by other people at other times had not been done. And it really, I was quite pressed for time in order to get it done in time, because I went there whenever it was in the autumn of 52, and from then to June 53 did not actually leave. It left barely enough time, having regard to what was needed. It was at a time when much of the business inside the Admiralty was done by docket, and on the docket you, as a staff officer, wrote your opinion or your proposal or whatever. And it went the rounds, and then it was eventually endorsed by your director, if it was, and so on. It was a sound system. It was pretty bureaucratic. It was fairly time-consuming. I took over nothing, really, at all, except a fairly vague figuring as to the number of officers and the number of sailors, and come to that, participation by the Royal Marines. For example, because I was involved in who was going to march in what positions in the procession, but the main taxing bit was how to line the streets. And we were responsible for lining the coronation route, which involved Trafalgar Square, although that was lined entirely by cadets from all three services. So a bit of Trafalgar Square, and you had to get that right. Northumberland Avenue, the embankment, Bridge Street, and the whole of Whitehall up to, but excluding, Admiralty Arch. The whole plan for the coronation, the ceremonial for it, was in the hands of London District in Horse Guards Parade. They were an extremely helpful lot. They were all senior to me. I quickly came to terms with them. I dealt with a couple of majors, one from the Grenadiers, I think, and the other from the Welsh Guards. They quickly became great personal friends. Sadly, I can't say the same about the Air Force, because they delegated the coronation arrangements to training command, and they were never there. And the London District didn't much care for that, but that was the way. They couldn't do anything about it. The plan was that once one had settled the participating numbers, which didn't take long, and some higher authority did that, and you merely took the number that you were given, and you had to know the number, and you had to know it to the last man, because otherwise you couldn't allocate the position. And then you had to work out things like the distance apart, man to man, along the route. And since you didn't have a map, how are you going to do that? And so on. So you had to get maps. Well, I eventually got them out of the police. But this was the sort of basic stuff that you thought might have been done beforehand, frankly. And I, doing my first job in the Admiralty, and very valuable it was to do it at that tender age, I didn't know the ins and outs, I didn't know where to go, I didn't know any of the civil service departments, quickly came to terms with them, and so on. So it was a bit of an uphill struggle. It was a steep learning curve. I could go on forever almost about this, but suffice it to say that the plan was that the naval contingent would be put up in Clapham Deep Shelter, which then was pretty habitable, actually. But I well recall the arrangements for the heads, the latrines, and the ablutions was in what had come to be called the festival heads. And all the windows were broken, and if you mended them, they were broken again. And that was the sort of air that Clapham then was. It is quite different now, and has been for some years. But then, it was a pretty rough spot, as will emerge from one or two of my yarns in a moment. And of course, it was a long way from Whitehall, and the layout of the streets in the area of Clapham bore practically no resemblance whatsoever to the layout of the route in London that we were going to have to line. So you not only had to get the distance right, but you had to say, well, for drill purposes, you have to turn a sharp right-hand corner here, and so on. I don't say that critically, because I don't think it was much alternative option, but it wasn't easy. The dress rehearsal, which was to take place, something like a week before the event, was to be at Clapham, not in the West End. And the First Sea Lord of the day, who was a man called McGregor, known as the Wee McGregor, very short, charming man, very clever, had been commanding the cruisers in Scarpa when I'd been in Duke of York. In order to achieve the single dress rehearsal, and in order also to, it acted as a sort of corroboration of your paper map plans, you had to mark out the streets in the vicinity of Clapham. And this really could only be done on a weekend. And you had such basic problems as you held one end of a tape measure with your pad of notes in the other, and you had to have another guy, and I hadn't got another guy. And so I borrowed a gunnery instructor from Whale Island. They were very grudging about releasing one. And more is to follow on that. And you put a mark on the curbstone on the pavement. And quite early on in this, an unfortunate, very upset woman came up to me, wringing her hands and on the brink of tears, and said, "Could I possibly tell her what these white blobs meant?" Because the local buzz was that any house with a white blob opposite was going to be demolished. And that was the sort of thing you were up against. It was really quite astonishing. You were strictly time limited by the weekend accessibility and so on. And I realized quite early on that we were running out of time. The gunnery instructor that I borrowed lived in London, and he thought he was in for a bonus long weekend. And since I required him on the job at 6 o'clock in the morning, he never had a bit of shock, a bigger shock. And he wasn't a terribly cooperative or nice man anyway, but so there it was. However, it quickly increasingly became apparent to me that we were going to run out of time. And again, one had to get this, you had to have done the whole thing, really, before you knew that it was acceptable, because if it was all right so far, you might have overlapped by, or underlapped by, whatever, at the far end. So it had to be a complete job, and it had to be so in sufficient time to give you time to correct it, if necessary, before the dress rehearsal. And also, it meant that simply in terms of physical distance by tape measure, you had to have that double check, because you then had to mark the West End out, similarly. Well, always in the vicinity of a particular part of Clapham Common, there was a crowd of small boys milling around, and I particularly wanted to get to a it was a Saturday night, and we'd had a long Saturday with the GI, and I wanted to get to a certain point before darkness fell, and then you couldn't go on, really. And so I went down to this crowd of small boys, all in the sort of 9 to 11 sort of age bracket, and said, anyone care to help the Navy for the coronation, hold the other end of tape measure. And fine, there's a bright young boy, doubled up smartly, and put him on the other end of tape measure. So I held one end, the boy held the other, and the gunner instructor painted in the marks. And we got on splendidly like that. We doubled up on the timing, and it was fine. And then it got dark. And we had to pack up. And I turned to the boy and said, now, I gave him his five bob, as I'd promised. And I said, I shall be back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. You probably won't want to start quite as early as that. But if you'd like to come back, because you know the drill now, you can get another five bob. And shortly after that, we packed up. 6 o'clock next morning, Sunday morning, the GI and I, rather miserable GI, who hadn't had his time at home, found ourselves back on the common. No sign of the small boy. And I had noticed as I'd driven there that although it was early on, there were a few youngsters about at the other end of the common. And so I drove in my Allard, which was fairly conspic. I drove down to the other end of the common and repeated the message, really, where anybody like to help the Navy for the coronation and earn five bob, hold the other end of the tape measure. And I'd hardly finished speaking when there was a youngster sitting in the seat alongside me. And I did say things, because I thought I had to, like, your parents won't mind, will they, because I'm going to take you up to the other end of the common. Oh, no, he said, I'm always playing up there, and that sort of thing. And so up we went, and we started off, and that was fine. And we'd been going for not all that long, let's say an hour, when up rode a police car. And I'd got a posse of police. And very fortunately, there was me at one end of the tape measure, and there was the small boy at the other end of the tape measure, and the GI was painting in the mark. And a burly sergeant came up to me and said, what's going on, sir? And it seems to be all right. And I said, it's quite all right. Is there a problem? And there was. And apparently, amongst that morning's team of youngsters had been the boy that I had had the previous evening. And though I hadn't noticed him, and it was, in any case, the other end of the common and so forth. And when the morning's lad had jumped into the car, this chap had, who was evidently his brother, had run off home and plundered into the house where the family was gathered over breakfast or whatever, and said, hey, Mum, little Johnny's gone off with a strange man in a red car. What are you going to do about that? And Clapham, as I say, Clapham and Balham were a pretty unsavory area at the time, and it was the sort that police patrols are fairly frequent, and they didn't go on their own, and so on. And it was pretty unsavory. Well, Mum went into hysterics, and Father, effing and blinding, went outside to the nearest call box and dialed 999. And quite quickly, because they reacted quite quickly in those circumstances, the police arrived, and a crowd gathered. And the police said things like, firstly, the father reiterated the small boy's yarn about what had gone on the previous night. No, he didn't yet. They were sort of dredging for information. The sergeant said something about, anybody else see this strange man in the red car? And out from the crowd came last night's wonder, who said, "Oh, yes, I was with him last night," and the police started to move towards their car. "He gave me 5 shillings, with all that implied. By this time, the police were in the car. They grabbed a small boy who was sitting in the back of the car when it came up to me later that morning. Well, this is a bit of a turn-up for the book, but the police were satisfied, and I think, you know, I was wearing overalls over an ordinary suit, and so forth. And the police saw what we were up to, and it was all fairly convincing stuff. I undertook, via the same small boy, to reassure the parents that I would have the morning small boy back in time for lunch. It being the Sabbath and Sunday dinners and all that stuff. And on we went. And the next thing that occurred, and these things never come singly, the next thing that occurred was that we ran out of paint. And of course we couldn't go on. There's no point in it. We didn't have any chalk, but that was another matter, and it wouldn't have lasted anyway. And by the luck of the Lord, I had spotted a man, I think that morning, painting the outside of a pub. And so I hopped into my car and drove fast down back to the pub. And the man had just finished whatever he was going to paint that Sunday morning and was getting astride his bike to go off home. By this time it was getting on in the morning. And so on, and I suppose he wanted his Sunday dinner as well. And we had to go up a quite steep hill, and at the top of the hill, graven in my mind, as you can see, at the top of the hill there was a fork in the road, and we got about two-thirds of the way up when my car came to a spluttering stop. And I whipped out and flung up the bonnet and couldn't find anything wrong and got back in, the car wouldn't start. And when I looked up again, the man had disappeared. And I didn't know which fork he'd taken, so I had no paint. Well, I can't remember how I got it, but I got some paint. And I went back, but by this time it was late and it was getting on for 2 o'clock. And I had not taken number 2 small boy back to his parents. So, you know, it was a catalogue of impending disaster, really. And that was the sort of thing that one was up against. Meantime, in Whitehall, there were various other goings on. For example, it was decided that the chiefs of staff would ride. Now, not very many...
Ride horses.
Not very many senior naval officers of the day, or come to that, senior RAF officers, were in the habit of riding. And I well remember seeing on a docket a remark by the controller, who was a man called Rafe Edwards, later he was to become Commander-in-Chief Mediterranean. And then he lost his marbles and was relieved in rather unfortunate circumstances, and so forth. And he and the 4th Sea Lord, whose name escapes me. It was the 2nd and the 4th, that's right. Rafe didn't say that. It was the 2nd and the 4th. And it was, their names have gone by. It doesn't really matter. But these were pretty senior members of the Admiralty Board. And they wrote in the docket, I can remember the exact wording, I think, "This is a ceremonial occasion of international importance, not a circus. Hereto, we will not ride." Initialed. And that was that. So they had to drag in substitutes. And they got hold of the Admiral President Greenwich and C&C Portsmouth, as he then was. Well, all right. And it was the practice, one of the worst offenders, really, was the 1st Sea Lord, the Wee McGregor, who had never been astride a horse in his life. And it became the practice of the board, in quotes, with the two supernumeraries, so to speak, to go for early morning practice in Rotten Row. And for this, they mustered at Hyde Park Horse Camp. And they did two circuits of the park, ending up in back in the camp. And they chose 7:30 because they reckoned that few were up and about at that hour, unlike today. And really, very few were up and about at that hour. And they thought they'd get by unnoticed. And meantime, in any spare moments, and there weren't many, I was doing research on the reports of the previous coronation in 37. I didn't get very much out of them, I may say. But one of the things I did get out was that instead of just wearing, because they had ridden then, instead of just wearing ordinary full dress, frock coats, epaulets, cocked hats then, of course. Well, there was no problem about the hats. But there was the question of the trousers. And they had to have elastic bands placed under the heel, as it were. And it was said that the correct uniform for a naval officer mounted was box spurs.